Blog Talk Radio.
To that, and good evening, good afternoon, good morning, depending on your time zone. Welcome everybody to Night Light. Welcome light workers, light body energies, seekers of the light, watchers, wardens, indigos, soothsayers, mystics, questers and querents, journeymen and journeyers, seekers, star children and philosophers, and all those seeking reason and magic in these times of awakening, evolution, and transformation. I'm Barb DeLong, your host, and along with Jeannie and James Luce, we invite you to come in out of the mainstream and gather around this nightlight in the darkness and confusion of the times. The show represents a sort of pit stop on your cosmic journey, so sit back, share your light with other light-minded people, gather for a time and be sheltered from the storms of evolution and change. This is our own very small oasis in the turmoil that we call creation. Share with us your light. I'll share mine, and so will everybody else with you. And with any luck, we can generate enough light to not only light our ways, but provide light enough for others who are seeking as well. These journeys that we're on began a very long time ago and will continue long after this lifetime has faded into memory. So gathering together, as we do every week, generates energy that can and is drawn on by countless others. Coming together and blending our lights creates energy that serves not only ourselves, but humanity as well. If you'd like to learn more about me, I invite you to visit my website. It's barbaradelong.com. There's a ton of information there, as well as links to blogs and this show and all of the other nefarious things that I am connected to. And also the other shows that I am connected to as well, on the first Tuesday and the last Thursday of every month, I do Almost Heaven with Lizzie Starr and Adele. And it's an amazing, wonderful spiritual show. It's on at 2 to 4 in the afternoon. And we do spiritual talk and also readings, of course. And it's a lot of fun, and I highly encourage you to visit the show, even if I'm not a guest on it. The show is a very good one. Lizzie Starr is amazing, and Adele is remarkable as well. So it's a wonderful way to spend your afternoon if you happen to have some free time and you want some insight that might change your perspective and open you to other possibilities and potentialities. That's a great one to tune in on. I do a number of other shows, too, and as I do them, they will go up on my website as far as when they're scheduled and stuff like that. I'm doing Mark Snyder's show on the 22nd. That's 9 to 11. It's on Blog Talk Radio. And I'll post this as we come closer to it. The other show that Jeannie and I do, which we are very thrilled and excited about, is the Nightlight Matrix show that is on Wednesday nights. That's a show where we do interviews and we speak with people on different topics that are of a metaphysical, paranormal nature. This last Wednesday, we had John Nowinski on, and we talked about his paranormal investigations, orbs, animal communication, past lives. We covered a whole multitude of things, and it was really fascinating, and he was amazingly informative. This next Wednesday, we have Laura on, a friend of mine, and she's going to be talking and sharing information about Wicca, which is, of course, also another fascinating topic. And then on the 22nd, we have Nick Rossler on, and that show is from 7 to 9. And he's the author of a book called In Focus Paranormal, and it deals with authenticated, validated UFO sightings that have happened through time. So I think we're going to touch on conspiracy, too, which I am very excited about as well. Let me tell you a little bit about my partner in crime here today. His name is James Luce, and he is a wonderful medium. He's an amazingly intuitive gentleman. He is actually, it's really kind of neat. He is a gentleman, and he's a gentleman. He has a kind, compassionate nature, and anybody who has ever had a reading with him falls immediately in love and is just absolutely enthralled by the insight that he is able to share with them. He joins me today, and he's going to join me at least one Friday a month if we can manage his schedule, because among other things, he's also an actor. So not only does he teach it, but he acts as well. And happily, June and I think it's June and July, he's going to be performing. So he's going to be a hard guy to kind of tackle and sit down on the telephone for a while, but I would almost guess that we'll be able to do it. You'll see him in the chat room. He's the James Luce Show. He has yet to put one on air, but we're going to start pushing him because he's so good on Blog Talk Radio. I just can't imagine he would just do one show a month with us. It feels to me as though, and Jeannie and I are going to try to sort of push him in that direction and help him out a little bit if he needs it. I don't think he does, though. His show would be amazing if we could get him to get it going. He probably has nothing else to do with his spare time, so, you know, we will push at it. Going to pull James on the air now. Hi, James. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you just fine, yeah.
Oh, good. I'm great. I'm so honored to be asked back to come back and read. It was great fun the last time, and I thank you so much.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. Everybody had a great time, and I got a lot of emails about when is James coming back. So, you know, that was a no-brainer. And today we're going to kind of focus on past lives. Certainly if there's another pressing issue, we'll certainly try to address that as well. But past lives has always been a fascinating thing for me because it's not just, you know, were you a centurion or were you a, you know, a shaman or were you a barmaid. Past lives actually have great relevance to this lifetime, and it's a very informative and enlightening experience to find out what some of your past lives were, because they usually come forward at a time when some of the talents and skills and insights that you had in that lifetime will help you this lifetime. So it's really a cool thing to do if you can find people that like to do past lives.
It's also about your life purpose. Everything you've said is so relevant, but it's your life, like, what are you here to learn this time? And when that light bulb goes on or that light is shown of you've gone through these lives and this is the culmination of the lesson, it just is like the hand of God coming down and telling you, okay, you're on a path, and you're not alone. You know, that's what I think past lives also do, is they just give you that confirmation and that education.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, they're exciting because they do give you amazing insight. I think the thing that I am so enthralled about past lives is that they clarify things so well.
Absolutely. The best. And it's also, you've done this before, the great things you've done before, so it gives you confidence in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've attracted things before. You've attracted puzzles and conundrums and being tied up. And so it's with guidance and with divine help, you can get out of it and learn the lessons. So it works in many ways.
Oh, absolutely. And it sometimes, you know, sometimes life takes really weird turns. And we don't really understand why things are falling the way they are and, you know, coming to us the way they are. It just doesn't make clear sense. And then if we go into our past lives, we understand it so much more thoroughly because it makes greater sense.
Absolutely.
So you know, and you know, some of our past lives are very profound, and some of them are apparently profound, and some of them are apparently very mundane. Until we find that correlation between this lifetime and that lifetime, and then it's a light bulb goes on, and it's that explains everything.
Yes, yes, and it's the best.
Oh, absolutely. Well, as is usually the case when we do something new on the show, just so people understand exactly what it is we're talking about, and we usually have a guinea pig that sort of goes first so that people can listen and see if, you know, that's something they would want to be exposed to. And our guinea pig is always Jeannie, because she, first of all, she loves being a guinea pig, and secondly, she's just a sucker for all of this stuff. So I'm going to pull Jeannie on. And hi, Jeannie, are you there?
Hi, Barb. Hi, James. Yes, I'm here.
Resident guinea pig here.
I do love it. I really do.
I think that's why she does the show, to tell you the truth, James. Every time somebody new comes on, Jeannie gets a reading first so people can, you know, hear what's going on. And with past lives, there are a lot of new people in the queue, and they haven't been through this this kind of a show before. So we're going to hit Jeannie first. I'm going to jump in because I have this wonderful past life on you, Jeannie, that I don't think I've given you before, because it's amazing. I see you as a circus performer standing on the back of horses and riding around a ring. And this goes back maybe 200-300 years. And you just, this was something that you loved to do, that you trained the horses and you rode them bareback, you stood on their backs, you jumped through hoops with the horses. You know, not only did you jump through hoops, but the horses jumped through hoops. You were very, very good at this. And what I find interesting is you never fell. but off of the horse. But in this particular past lifetime, probably around the age of 55, you did fall in a very mundane way, and it hurt your hip, and you weren't able to ride anymore. And there was a period of time where you were very, very depressed, and then you realized that you could work your magic with other animals, and so that's what you did. You trained other animals that you didn't have to, you know, stand on their backs and ride. But it comes forward to this lifetime where you know, sometimes you can't do exactly what you think you want to do, but you find something else that is a far richer experience for you. And I think that's what you're going through right now.
That sounds like exactly what I'm going through right now, because I did just about the same thing this lifetime.
Well,
except
maybe
I struck it hard. I fell. You know, well, and hurt my hip. And I didn't fall, but 5 inches.
Yeah, I understand that. But I think maybe you were done with the horses to that degree. I mean, I'm not saying you're going to walk away from horses, because I don't think that's the case at all. But it does feel like it's time for another phase. It's time for another direction. And it does feel as though that's what you're kind of going through now, kind of waiting for that other direction to knock on the door and say, this way, please. James, what are you getting?
There is a natural gregariousness and talkativeness and helpfulness and outgoing healing energy about you, Jeannie, and the life that comes in, and I'm thinking it's the Middle Ages. It's you know, 1150, 1250. You were a mummer. Which is a type of medieval entertainer working under the radar, not being detected by the church, and getting away with certain things without the church zapping you. And what you really did, because there's a connection before and after St. Francis in 1215, but you did a lot of what St. Francis wanted people to do. In other words, you entertained people in plague states. You went around and you told stories, and you played games, and you played fun little games with walnuts and with dice and with fruit to people who were dying, people who had the plague, people who were malnourished. And you brought a lot of joy and light in their life. And you did this in disguise. You have a hood on. And sometimes as you traveled and you never asked for anything, but you got amazing donations. You got bread and meat and any materialistic donations you gave away to other people who needed help. But you performed great acts of charity through entertainment in disguise. This was before St. Francis in 1215. But you're doing what St. Francis wanted us to do is give to the poor and entertain the poor. And you're very resilient, very resilient. I mean, you wouldn't catch the plague. You didn't get sick. And you lived to a very old age. I want to say back in, 1200, you lived till about 80, which was ancient back then. And
wow.
there's another life next to that, where you are doing the same thing. You're counseling and entertaining and healing people and helping people, but you're a crone that lives in a tree.
A
crone. an old woman living in a tree that has a lot of wisdom, and people come to you. And you perform marriages, and you talk with the fairy kingdom, and people come to you for advice and counsel.
Wow. That's fascinating.
Definitely, definitely. All
so
right,
your conversational ability in your conversational ability in this life is very ancient. The fact that you can talk about anything, and you can make people feel better by talking about anything and heal people.
Wow. Yeah, I do that a lot. So, well, thank you guys. That's amazing. People are in for a wonderful treat. I enjoy that.
I would say so too, Jeannie. Back to work.
I know. Back to work, slave driver.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Okay.
God bless.
Yeah, I keep doubling her salary. She doesn't seem to be impressed with that. Actually, the last time I doubled it, you know, she said, "Well, it's you know, twice nothing is nothing." I said, "I tell you what, you'll get the exact same thing I get."
Yes,
and
everything is equal. Everyone is equal.
That didn't impress her either. So, okay, we're going to pull Ashley on here. Hi, Ashley, how are you doing today?
Hello, I'm good. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, our pleasure. You know, without you guys, James and I are just going to sit here talking to each other. Not that that wouldn't be interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting anyway.
Okay, so we're doing past lives. Is that okay with you?
Sounds good, yeah.
Okay, I'm getting a number of past lives for you, and most of them see, you know, it's really funny. I see you as a beekeeper back about, maybe 400 or 500 years ago, and I see you as in Europe, and you had an ability and a talent with bees, and they never stung you. They may have stung other people, but they just landed on you, and they never stung you, and you made the best honey. Well, you didn't do it. Your bees made the best honey in the kingdom, and it felt as though you used it for healing. So there was this aspect of healing, and of course people then understood that if you took natural honey from that area, that it helped you to build immunities from a lot of things, you know, from pollen on up. So that honey was a tool that you used for healing. Not only did you keep the bees, but you were a healer, and you went around the countryside helping people understand how what they ate helped them to you know, the nutrition was very important to you at the time, and you really did gently and easily try to help to ease people into a healthier way of life. You know, a lot of them still died, but I keep seeing you with the buzzing of the bees around your head, and I feel that this lifetime, you sometimes hear the bees, and they're not there. And it's to remind you that you are a healer, and you are a profound healer, and you will heal in your own way and not in the way that anybody else tells you you should heal. You're going to use your talents, your skills, and your wisdoms that you've brought through lifetimes past into this lifetime, and you gently will help to ease people into a healthier way of life in spite of the fact that they really don't want to. So that you are a gentle voice that changes people's ways, and you do it subtly under the radar so that nobody really knows what's going on. But you have this sweetness about you that sometimes is almost sticky sweet. And the universe is this, you know, you can catch more flies with honey than you can with vinegar. And the universe is sort of telling you, remember that sweetness can pull people into your energetic field, and then you can work your magic on them. But unless you can attract them through a kind, gentle, sweet nature, you can't make a dent in their armor. But sweetness will get you anywhere. James, what are you getting?
Ashley, could you just say a sentence for me one more time?
Sure. I can say you attract more bees with honey. Is that what it was?
That's good. That's good. Okay. I'm getting three lives. There's a pattern in that you were in one life. You're a little boy in ancient Rome that was trained into being a clown. And it's the perkiness that you have, because you have a real element of surprise about you. You know how to surprise people and mm-hmm. tease people and lift their hearts and be perky and surprising. But you were like this. You were a clown. You were a member of a troupe of clowns in ancient Rome. And then I want to say, I'm not sure, maybe in the Commedia dell'arte, you know, maybe about 1530. And then the interesting thing is, when you were a young lady doing this, you turned into an exotic dancer. which is a way of you kind of went into spell casting, but you went from the perky type of surprising entertainment of being after dinner entertainment as a clown into much more formal movement and still casting spells, but you were in palaces and you were in villas in Italy and dancing with scarves, doing tableau, I want to say maybe 1550, our life in 1650 doing that. So there's a real appreciation in your perkiness that entertains people of beauty, of beauty and symmetry and sensitivity and artistic creativity.
Yeah, I combine both in my career.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a clown, but
but your perkiness, you're very perky.
I'm an artist.
Oh, you are, because...
But I work with people as a photographer, so
I act silly
to get them to cooperate.
Well, that's it, because your composition as a photographer, as this dancer in the courts of Rome, I mean, you really had a sense of design, beauty, composition, architecture. You were quite quite accomplished.
Cool. Fascinating. Did you say there were three that you saw?
One was a little boy. One was a girl that turned into the exotic dancer, and one was a courtier, a lady of the court that turned. But it's funny, you went into, so the last one, I would say about 1650, is you were the exotic dancer that turned into more the event planner. I mean, like decorating the palace and creating the banquet and setting the scene.
Cool.
Yeah, I have one more for you. I always look for the strange, because they're more fun. And if you go back about 1500 years, you were a spy.
Ooh.
And I find you listening in strange places. It feels as though you put yourself in positions where you could sort of fade into the woodwork and listen, and then get information and take it back to people that would pay you for the information. And you were a male in this lifetime, and what I find fascinating is that you found that you got a great deal of your information in bordellos.
Oh.
So you frequented them a lot, but you never paid for the services. You just hung out and listened. And you crossed lines many times, battle lines, political lines. You carried information back and forth to different countries. You were really very well known as someone who always had information to sell, and you sold to the highest bidder. And that talent for listening when everyone else feels they have to talk, you have this lifetime. You gather information like crazy. You listen unbelievably well, and you file things away for use at a later time. And I don't feel you being a spy this lifetime, but I do feel that you are one of the keenest listeners around, and it's a talent and a skill that nobody has picked up on yet.
So, wow.
So
that's fascinating.
So
I can see how that would tie into my current career as far as, like, you know, finding information and then relaying it, but now I do it in the form of photography.
But it's also in no matter what you do, you are the listener. You are someone who is compiling information, and what's really fascinating is that you know, the time is going to come that you take some of the wisdom and some of the information, and not on a personal level, but some of the wisdom that you've heard, and you're going to weave it into a book that has spiritual wisdom in it, along with your photography, that will sort of help people to understand, The Purpose to Life and the Reason for Love.
That sounds so right on. That sounds absolutely accurate. I totally believe that that will happen.
Okay. I'm going to stop then.
I'll follow your head. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
That was fascinating. You guys, that's so fascinating. Thank you. I love the show.
Oh,
both of you.
Thank you. Oh, this is so much fun. You know.
Thank
so
you. Thank you.
Come back
thank
on you. As a guest.
Oh, he'll be back.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Actually, James, you know, you are the James Luce Show. Are you going to ever put one on the air?
I know you're going to you're going to prod me into that. So yes,
I am.
Yes,
I am.
Okay. Yes.
God, you're so easy. Jeez.
Yeah, it'll happen. It'll happen. You know, but yes.
I think it'll happen in the fall.
You're right. Absolutely, because I got to get done with these two big roles I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But come fall, I think that we're going to just sort of gently, no, we're going to nag you.
Okay.
You know? We'll nag you. Okay. We've got Connie in Colorado. Connie, hi, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Barbara. Hi, James.
Hi.
We're having fun today. Past Lives okay with you?
Sure. I'm very interested in it. I had talked to you and Mary quite a few months ago after my husband passed. And I was stressing on why I hadn't seen or heard him. And you told me him and I had been together in past lives. So I was very interested in learning more about my past lives and how I can use it to my benefit today.
Well, it's really funny. I find that there are a number of them. The most recent one is probably just a couple hundred years ago. You were a tinker. And you traveled all over the countryside with a wagon and horses, and you fixed things. You fixed little things. What I find fascinating in this lifetime, I'm seeing you as a very, very old man. And I'm seeing you, you know, wandering the countryside, just, you know, being like a handy person and fixing things for people. But the reality is you did more than just fix the can opener or a squeaky hinge or whatever. You fixed people's lives, and you had a kind, gentle, sensitive wisdom that helped people to talk through their difficulties in a very easy way so that they didn't even realize that you were helping them find a way to make life better for themselves and the people around them. And if you go back, couple hundred more years back more around 1215, I find you actually doing basically a similar thing, but you travel town to town to town to town. There was the element of a wanderer in you and constantly looking for something and not knowing what it was you were. You weren't at this time a tinkerer, but you had to wander. There was something about you that just couldn't stay in one place. You had to feel movement. You had to see what was over the next hill. You had to go beyond the next mountain range. You were pushed by something inside of you, and you could never give an answer to what it was.
I'm still like that.
Okay, well, you haven't found what you're looking for yet then, you know, obviously. And so if we go back, let's go back even further. You were someone who was an explorer, but you weren't, and now I'm taking you back into the 900s. You were somebody who always looked for somewhere that no one had been before. You were an explorer, but you were not financed by any court or any country. You did it on your own, and you were constantly looking to get away from civilization because civilization bugs the hell out of you. And you would just prefer to be around nature, within nature. If you go back even further, you were a druid. And you like the solitude of the woods. You like the solitude of being alone with Mother Nature. And that to you is the most healing thing in the world. And you were constantly looking for places where the trees created canopies. And you ended up in South America in the jungle there. And you became, in that particular lifetime, you became You were adopted by a, you were hurt in the jungle. A tribe picked you up, healed you, and you then learned their magic, and you became the shaman, the healer for that particular tribe. And there are legends still of you. At that, in that lifetime, you were a man, and there are legends still of the white man that came into the jungle and stayed and made it his home and helped people and healed people and shared love. And it's interesting. Though at the time you were a Christian, you were sharing the teachings of Christ as opposed to the religion of Christ. So that you taught love, you taught compassion, you taught unconditional love and unconditional sharing without strings attached and without judgment. And you were very, very magic, and there are still legends to this day in South America about your teachings.
Oh, wow.
James, what do you got?
Say your name one more time.
Connie.
Now, between being the druid healer shaman, I am getting, I think, 200 AD in China, in the middle of China. And you are, you're a man that gives a lot of lectures and is very outspoken and is always dropping his papers, but very excited and obsessed with block printing, brush painting, block printing, but you give lectures on sun and moon and Chinese astrology and the various years of the various animals, and you're compiling this book, but you lose, there is so much that you write down on scrolls and tablets and that you also block print. That you leave it everywhere, but you're very respected in various towns. You're tall, long, thin gentleman, and you naturally speak very eloquently in front of groups of people, and sort of give purpose to this. There are several civil wars going on, and you know, you're part of the beginning of Chinese medicine in all the different levels, whether it's Tai Chi, Qigong, acupuncture, herbal medicine, and you relate it to Chinese astrology. So you've kind of got a white light coming out of your head, which is similar to what Barbara saw you in the Western part of the world, but you did have a life in the eastern part of the world. I want to say, 200-250 AD, in which much more civilized than Rome was at that time. You did write everything down, and you did publish. It has been passed down into various schools of Chinese herbal medicine, making of tea and acupuncture.
Oh, neat.
And you're a great speaker. You're a great speaker in front of people.
Yeah, I always got high marks in public speaking, and I love giving presentations. And
you've been doing it for like 3,000 years.
And what about the writing? I have been toying with doing a kind of a book guide on raising a child while you have a spouse with a terminal illness passing away. Because when we were going through it with my husband, there was really nothing for the kids. And a lot of adults are like, oh, don't say anything. And we were very open and honest with him. He was 12. And everybody commented on how good that was and we should do something with it.
And the book is perfect. The book is perfect because all of your writing and speaking in the Chinese life and in the lives Barbara mentioned, all of this is from your direct experience. I mean, you're not a researcher. You're a doer. I mean, all of your public speaking is from your actual experimentations with plant medicine, with healing people. with looking at personality and analyzing personality according to Chinese astrology. So you have written before, and the writing, it'll come very easily to you. It'll come very easily to you. You won't need it's good to have an editor, but, I mean, you won't need what I'm trying to say is you won't need that many drafts. It'll just come out of you.
Okay, and how was my relationship? Am I trying to fix something in this current life? Or?
Well, I think so, because I got, as this Chinese doctor, you were really wandering, just like I think Barbara said. I mean, you were traveling, so you had followers and you had assistants, but you didn't have a real... In 280 in China, you didn't have you weren't hooked into someone as a partner. You had a lot of assistants. So you're trying to experience that in this life as well as in other lives.
Okay.
Yeah, and let me add something too. You're not done. You're still working on relationships.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So write the book and get real busy and then be very shocked and surprised at what the universe leaves at your doorstep.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Take care now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, so we got Tim in California. Hi, Tim. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, absolutely spectacular. Absolutely. We're doing past lives today. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Okay. James, you go first this time.
Okay. You got a 19th century, you got a Victorian life. You're a very sweet, caring, bulbous little man. I think you've got 12 children. You're very jolly. I want to say you're in the Dickensian period, so that could be 1820, 1870. You have a real ability with neatness and order and organization. You were a shopkeeper. Have an eye for beauty and crafts, but good at business and good at the club. And the thing that was amazing about you, because you're very open-hearted, is that you get along with the club, you get along with business, you raise 12 children, you love your wife, you don't cheat on anybody, you're good and kind to all. You die young in that life, I want to say, because you just spread yourself too thin. But the thing is, you have a jolliness and a fluffiness about you that you're great with raising children, you're great in a relationship, you're great with business associates, and you have a real style. You're kind of pudgy in that life, but you have a real style about you. Your shop was known, I don't know, on the Strand or Regent Street for its neatness, you know, and I think you're selling leather goods and clothes and things like that. But that's one life that comes in strong.
Okay, I have one that I have to jump in with. You were a horse thief. And a very good one. And I'm in the steppes. I'm in the Russian steppes here. And you stole horses and you sold them and you made great profits. And what I find amazing is you were very clever and you did it in very unusual ways, so that you were never actually caught, but you were always able to find something that someone else had discarded and put value in it and then sell it to somebody else who saw that value as well, so that in this particular past lifetime that you were a horse thief, this goes back probably 1,000 years. And I have to go back even further, and it's interesting. You've been a salesman in a lot of past lives, and you sold very unique and unusual things. And usually you have found, if we go back even, you know, a little further, I'm in about the I'm back about 1500 years. You were someone that picked up things that other people had discarded and made them into works of art, and then sold them with amazing stories about how they had been created by the gods, and people just absolutely flooded to your shop, to your area where you were where you were set up, and they were always so amazed that the gods had gifted you with so much talent and so much amazing skill. And the reality is you were putting together things that had been thrown away and calling them artwork, and then weaving a story around them that created an illusion of beauty that actually wasn't there. But you were an amazing salesperson, and in that particular lifetime you became very, very wealthy, and it was almost as though all you had to do was put your name to it and people would buy it. It sounds like Picasso, but you were Picasso. So then if we go back even further, there is this sense of being the middleman, the man that takes one to that picks up something for a little amount of money and turns around and sells it for great richness because they have perceived another aspect of the use of it. And I think that this lifetime you do exactly the same thing, that you can find value and worth in things that other people have let go of, and you can turn them into a fortune. Are you in any way connected with sales of any sort?
No, in fact, sales repulses me.
well, if ever
you're a good communicator, you're excellent at communication with people. Are you in this life?
Yes, I've been known to be a good speaker and a good teacher.
Yeah, and people love you. I mean, you draw people to you. Because all of our lives, Barbara's given you three, I've given you one, you have that magnetism about you.
Yeah, you know what does resonate is I typically, at work, with people, I work with the people that everyone else has discarded, that they've given up on. I usually get really good results with really rehabilitating employees just to feel good about themselves and to feel good about their work. So that kind of, that whole discarded, being drawn to that really resonates with me.
And the other thing that is here in lots of past lives, too, is the theater. So, you know, I don't know if you've thought about it this lifetime, but it may be something you might want to play with at some point in time.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling.
You bet.
Bye now.
Bye.
Okay, we've got Carlos in California. Hi, Carlos. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. I got stung by a bee, but I'm surviving.
Oh, dear, we have a beekeeper here. She probably could tell you how to get yourself better. We're doing past lives today. Is that okay with you?
That's perfect.
Okay, I'm seeing you... It's funny. I'm seeing you in Holland going back, 400 years or so, and I'm seeing you skating and loving to skate. And all. But what I find fascinating is while you were very, very good, you loved to skate on thin ice. And inevitably, you fell through. But there was such a joy for you to be able to skate on the ice, to see just how far you could go on the thin ice before it collapsed under you. So you bring that element of a risk taker into this lifetime. You will skate on thin ice just for the sheer joy of skating on thin ice, knowing that eventually it's going to give way beneath you. If we go back even further, I keep getting pulled to the Dutch area of the country, because I'm seeing you were a farmer and you raised plants that were sold. I my inclination would be to say tulips, but I don't think it was tulips. You raised vegetables that were sold. You raised food stuff that you were a farmer and you. What I love about that particular lifetime is you gave away most of what you grew. You you preferred to give your stuff to people who were in need as opposed to making yourself richer. And it was a wonderful quality. Unfortunately, your family did starve to death, but lots of people survived without you, because of you. And so it was you were liked and loved, and unfortunately you forgot that you had a family that needed to be fed too. And so this lifetime the message is, you know, take care of home first and then take care of the other people. But you're a very giving and loving individual, and you have this wonderful quality about you that you would rather give things away and help other people than actually to earn a living. So earning a living for you this lifetime is kind of a little, it's hard because you so much want to help other people at the same time. Finding something that corresponds to both aspects is difficult for you, but you're certainly doing a great job in finding it. James, what do you have?
Carlos, can you just say your name one more time?
Carlos.
Okay, I get that you're a female singer in 1750, Paris, London, and street singer that kind of graduates to the opera and is what do we want to say? The mistress of many highwaymen. Yeah. And you're very artistic, very sensitive. You have a real following in terms of music and communication and singing. And everybody that you sleep with and have liaisons with adores you, which gives you a long life. But you really are you go back and forth across the English Channel, singing at tiny little theaters, singing at campfires, singing at the convocations of highwaymen, and there's a real nurturing type of nurse attitude to you as well. You're kept in rooming houses and adored. You could have been a real classical musician, but you stayed with the low lives and really loved them. And your best friend, who was one of your many lovers, lost his mind and went into Bedlam, and you went into Bedlam with him. Bedlam is the famous insane asylum. He was dragged off into the asylum, and you, because of your love and devotion, went there and died with him.
Wow.
Does that ring a bell at all? Because you're a real ragtag running around, but very
no,
loving and creative. What?
Yeah, all of that really, really resonates with me in a lot of different ways. And actually, all of those lives, I can take pieces of them and incorporate them within me right now. And it's something that I've been feeling for a while. So you're right on.
Cool. Well, use them wisely, and don't forget to take care of your family.
Yeah, definitely.
And you are incredibly creative. I mean, everything Barbara said about being a risk taker, I mean, you went from group of thieves to group of thieves as an entertainer, as a healer, and everyone fell in love with you. So you will never be without creativity. You will always be able to get out of a tight situation.
That is, once again, super spot on, and that's something I've always believed. So thank you so much for the validation.
You're so welcome.
Bless you.
Take care now.
Take care of yourself, too.
Okay, we've got Carrie. She's been holding for a long time. She's from South Africa. Hi, Carrie. How are you doing?
Hello. Good, and you?
Hi. We're doing past lives today. Is that okay with you?
Yep. That's what I called for.
Okay. just want to make sure that we give you what you want here. You know, we
yep.
really... So I find it fascinating. Every time I kind of focus on your name, I keep getting this huge sailing ship. And okay. and I do believe that you have been the master of a sailing ship in many past lives. And if I go back, I think I want to really I want to go back to about the 800s. And uh-huh. it feels as though there was an aspect here of you ran away to the sea. And you absolutely, the sea just nurtured you. It was almost, you kept saying that the sea was your mistress, the sea was your lover, the sea was your home. You didn't want to be under the water, but on the water was really, really important to you. And,
wow.
And it feels as though I want to jump from that lifetime to the fact that I do believe. Oh, now it gets weird. Is it okay if I get slightly weird?
Go for it.
Okay. Okay. I go from that lifetime to way back to back another 3,000 years to an island that no longer exists, and it's not Atlantis. Don't go going the Atlantis thing. An island that no longer exists, but that had a culture on it that this world has not yet discovered or acknowledged or you know delved into. It was a very advanced culture. I do believe that the people I'm getting kind of flashes of how they looked, and they don't feel as though they would have fit into today's society very well at all. So I think that you've been an alien in a past life. Is basically what I'm getting down to. And I do believe that there is that quality of you really feeling like you're not from this planet totally. I do believe that if you had to say really where was home, it would be Orion's Belt. I do believe that there is an awareness inside of you that transcends this reality, and I think that in many ways you are a dual dimensional being in this lifetime. Now, I don't know that you have any consciousness of the other dimension, but I do know that you have perceptions and you have intuitions and you have insight and you have wisdoms that you haven't even shared with people yet, and I would love for you to do some writing because I think you need to share them with us all. James, it's all yours.
Yeah, the first thing I got, even before Barbara went into interplanetary life, I between lives,
yeah.
You came down. I mean, you had wings. You were like a fairy. You were an elevated elemental, as Rudolf Steiner would say. You know, you were part of the elemental world. You were part of the fairy kingdom, and because you have that sense of humor and that capacity of love and that delicacy and that daintiness. This was between lives, between incarnations. But I think that you would come down to this planet as a fairy spirit, as a spirit, to help with childbirth and to help with old souls in young bodies and young souls in young bodies and nurture them, and you could be seen by certain people, children especially, and then you could also disguise yourself into the plant world. And I feel England is and Germany and France, but this is like between lives because you have that delicacy and that daintiness, and you're so loving, and you have a lot of pity and love for this planet. You know, you're a real sweet, loving healer to all the innocents here.
Mhm. Mhm. Wow. Blow me away, guys.
Okay, well, we aim to please. thanks
cool.
for calling.
Thank you. Can I ask?
Sure.
The fairy thing with helping childbirth, is that
connected to the medical field by any chance?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but I want to say, I want to say Arthurian. I want to say England 600, you know, AD. In other words, you were there. Okay, this is what I'm saying. Someone is having a problem birthing a child or twins or triplets, and you come in as a piece of light and as an elemental fairy spirit, but what you would do is materialize, this is like further proof of what Barbara said about you, you would materialize into the midwife, into the room, or possess the midwife and come into the room and save lives and help young spirits be born in young bodies, or old spirits be born in young bodies, and make sure that things were well and healthy and taken care of, and then you would fly away and be on your merry way.
Okay. I understand that. Okay. I'm not going to elaborate. I understand it.
But you are really great in the medical profession because you understand the human anatomy from an intuitive standpoint as well as other standpoints. But you understand healing and helping the human anatomy and the spirits inside the anatomy from many different standpoints. You're very ancient.
Awesome. This is so cool. I love it.
Okay, thanks for calling in.
See you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, that was cool. We got Cheryl in California. Hi, Cheryl. How are you doing today? Hello, Cheryl. Cheryl must be out getting coffee.
Okay.
We will try. Oh, goodness. You're in California. Is it Kahela?
Kahela.
All right. We're doing. Say it once more for me.
Yeah, Kahela, and I'm from Florida.
Okay. We're doing past lives today. Is that okay with you?
I mean, yes, that's perfectly fine.
Okay. It's almost a Victorian past life here. I can see you in Victorian dress. I can see you with the gloves and the tightly cinched waist. And it feels, I see you in Europe. It feels as though it's France. And I feel that we're back a couple hundred years. And in that particular lifetime, you were someone who cared for the older members of the family. You were the one who you were the last born. You were the youngest in the family of about nine, and you were the one that had to stay at home and take care of your parents after everybody else had married and moved on. And you did an amazing job, and you were absolutely compassionate, and you were resolved that you would, you know, take care of everyone, and that you would not have a life of your own. And the magical part about this particular lifetime is that after everyone had passed, you were what would have been called at the time a spinster. You were like in your 40s, and you know, you really figured you were just gonna hang around and wait to die. And you met your soulmate, and you had the most magical, amazing love affair, and then marriage, and lengthy marriage with this person, and it was almost as though the universe was rewarding you for your selfless giving of yourself to other people, and the universe rewarded you, and you have that same aspect this lifetime. You know, even though sometimes people don't seem to appreciate the things you do and the things you say, it feels to me as though you unconditionally give yourself and give of yourself and help other people, and the universe will send rewards your way. It'll come when you least expect it, but there are rewards coming like crazy all over the place. There's also, if I go back another 500 years, it does feel as though you were someone who, and this is a lifetime in Greece, and you were a man, and you were very wealthy, and you chose not to marry and have children, but you did use your wealth and your influence to care for orphans and children that had been left unattended, and you did it. It's interesting. Your money financed orphanages, homes, all sorts of things for these children, and it paid for their education. Yet you did not become involved with them. You basically oversaw everything, but you did not get involved with all of the charges that you had. And you did that so that they could not come back and thank you, because you didn't want to be thanked. You were doing it because you just felt it was the right thing to do, and you didn't want people to sort of make you a saint. You just wanted to do what was right and get on with life, and you do that this lifetime too. You're a very kind, generous, sweet individual who oftentimes is overlooked because you don't put out, you know, big signs, you know, hey, I've done a good thing. You just do wonderful, kind things for other people, and the universe is going to reward you unbelievably. James, what do you have?
Can you say your name in a sentence one more time, please?
Hi, my name is Kakalia, and I attend the University of Florida.
From where in Florida?
University of Florida.
Okay. I'm getting... from 1710 to about 1860, you were an African. You have several lives as an African that was captured by the Spanish as a slave and bought into trade. And you were of diminutive stature. You always came back as the same. You were a very fragile, frail young girl of diminutive stature, but great pride and great dignity, and really told the Portuguese and the Spanish off because you watched your husband die. You watched your mother starve to death. And you would not let the Spanish or the Portuguese overseer come at you. You are a very proud African, and to the point of in one life when you converted to Christianity, you were, you know, at the front of the church very proper. But there's a lot of dignity in you, and you're not afraid of death. You have, in the 150 years, I want to say you've got like three lives, four lives. You're not afraid of death. The most important thing is human rights and standing up and speaking what you believe and correcting injustice. And from a very diminutive, tiny person from what we would say today, Sierra Leone or someplace, but you were you have great power and force and dignity.
Wow, that's really cool. I do feel like I could connect with that. Like, I feel like I feel like I want to carry my family's, you know, responsibilities on my back and help a lot of people. And yeah, I can definitely sense all those things that you're saying, and justice and equal rights for everyone. And yeah.
And speaking the truth in a tyrannical society, speaking the truth and trying to correct injustice and human rights, and people wouldn't take you seriously because you were tiny, but you would disrupt. You would always strike a blow for the good, and it was pretty amazing. I mean, I got to say, the angels love you, because you did this in a span of about 150 years in about three or four lifetimes. And it's like, I'm not afraid to die. I'm saving this life. I'm not afraid to die. And now you're back to do the same thing, but have a good time and live a long time.
Okay.
Definitely. Well, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you, our pleasure.
God bless you.
Okay. Moving right along, we have Danielle. Hi, Danielle. How are you doing today?
Great. How are you?
Oh, we're doing fantastically well. We are doing past lives today. Is that okay with you?
That's great. Thank you.
James, you go first this time.
Okay. Danielle, can you just speak a sentence for me so I can get into your vocal vibration?
Sure. My name is Danielle, and I'm from California.
I want to go. I see two lives in the Arabic Empire, the Ottoman Empire, the Turkish Empire. I want to say around. Hold on. Like 900 A.D. and another one about 1100 A.D. And you have a gift in designing textiles. In fabrics, you have a gift in wall painting, designing frescoes, stained glass. I want to say in ancient Syria. I want to say Istanbul, Constantinople, and in that section. And there in one of these lives with your. Gift for design, there is a real consciousness of fashion that is exotic and a bit revolutionary and a bit outlandish, but you have a great sense of color and composition and beauty, and you're a man. There's two. You're a man in one life, and I think you're a woman that wants to create and express, and kind of hides yourself into being a man, so you can be a painter and a designer and a textile designer. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No. Go ahead, James.
That's all.
Oh, okay. I'm seeing you as a shaman in the Pacific Northwest, and this goes back 400 years easy, maybe even 600 years, and what I'm finding fascinating is, you know, with it goes right in with your textiles, the feathers and the beads. You were not a subtle person at all. You absolutely stood out from the crowd. It was really quite
profound.
Yeah,
you're a real designer. Yes.
And the feathers especially were something that were very important to you. And I keep seeing eagle feathers. I do feel that there is the element here of eagles being a special of special interest to you. I think probably a totem or a power animal. And basically what I'm seeing here is that you helped to guide an entire people away from the coastline before it was inundated by water. Apparently there was a tsunami or something coming, and you got the job of shaman primarily because you saved hundreds of people by insisting that they all move inland by 100 miles or so. And it feels as though during that lifetime, you had an innate understanding and sense of what Mother Nature was going to do. You had a definite connection with the Earth Mother, and so when there were going to be storms, when there was going to be an earthquake, when there was going to be any major catastrophe of any kind, you had warning of it in your bones. You had warning of it. It wasn't a spirit dropping in and saying, "By the way," it was a knowingness that you had that was respected and trusted and acted upon by a whole people. And when I say a whole people, I'm not talking a small group of 25 or 30 Indians or Native Americans. I'm talking thousands. It's almost as though an entire culture paid attention to what you were saying and acted upon it. If I go back even further in time, 1,500, 2,500, 3,500 years, you were a Phoenician, and you were a navigator, and you helped the Phoenicians. Actually, good piece of trivia for anybody, the best explorers and navigators in the world were the Phoenicians, not the Spanish or the French or the English, but the Phoenicians. Anyhow, in this particular lifetime, you were a navigator, and not only could you navigate by the stars, but you were also an astrologer, and you combined the navigation skills and the astrology with finding and discovering new places to cultivate, to populate, to move into. And you were one of the first to hit South America, and you did not leave. Once you hit South America, you stayed and were absorbed into the culture there. I'm seeing Peru, I'm seeing the coast of Peru, and I'm seeing again the element of vibrant feathers being a part of your persona. So, I mean, I can, you know, it feels like you really need to have feathers around you. Are you attracted to feathers by any chance?
Not that I've ever thought of, no.
Because the vibrancy of the colors is something that really seems to be coming forward this lifetime. You were a healer. You were a navigator. You were one who found direction and listened to the wind and got messages on the wind. So you have a connection with nature that perhaps you haven't worked upon yet this lifetime. But I would be willing to almost bet money that when the barometer takes its dips and changes, if it goes radically one direction or another, that your body senses that and reacts to it with either a headache or a discomfort of some sort.
Right, right. You're right.
Okay. James, what you got?
You're incredibly complex because what Barbara's saying about the shamanic abilities, and then in your Arabic life, the two Arabic lives that I picked up, what do I want to say? You have the ability to read colors and shapes and patterns. Big thing. I think there's a Buddhist life, maybe it happens in there briefly, where you are creating prayer wheels in temples. I mean, you have that ability of color, shape, design, and composition that is clairvoyant, that's intuitive, as Barbara said. So you, does any of that ring a bell?
I'm not sure. Right now I'm a floral designer.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
So somewhat, but I've already have had quite a few different professions in my life. So just trying to figure it out what's right.
You're definitely in the right direction with the floral design, because that was the first thing I got from you is, you know, you're designing houses and frescoes and windows in Arabic houses. You really understand textiles and patterns and colors. So this is I would say go ahead and study feng shui. Just it's going to open things up for you.
Great, thank you.
And you know, the other thing too is I feel you're very eclectically oriented, so that having a lot of different professions is very appropriate for you. I can't imagine you stuck in one profession for an entire lifetime. You have to have change, and you have to move around, and you have to try different things and new things.
That's very true.
So that's just part of your makeup. Well, thanks for calling today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Take care now. Okay, we got Teresa. Hi, Teresa. How are you doing today?
I am good. How are you guys?
Oh, fabulous. Absolutely fabulous.
Good.
We're doing past lives today. Is that okay with you?
That would be great.
First thing I've been waiting for this one. You were an amazing belly dancer in Babylon. And You were just so good. It was unbelievable. People paid money. I mean, and happily, you took advantage of it. You kind of went outside the box. You did not stay. You did not hold to tradition. You outraged your family. They turned their backs on you because you were an entertainer in a time when a woman doesn't, you know, show any piece of her skin. And you were amazing. You did what gave you great joy. And I think that's the important part of it. You followed your joy for your entire lifetime in this particular one. And you gave great joy to other people as well. And it was overwhelming that there was a sadness, of course, because your family would have nothing to do with you. Not your immediate family. You had distant uncles that were very fond of you, but, I digressed. And so there's the element of the entertainer in you, the element of wanting to bring joy to people. And if I go back even further, I'm finding that you used laughter as a source of healing, and you were a court jester, and you were able to share your wisdom with nobility by making them laugh, and they ignored the fact that it was coming from a fool, because they were laughing so hard that they didn't understand that you were giving them sound, absolutely priceless advice along with your laughter. And you didn't mind at all people laughing at you, because they really weren't laughing at you. They were laughing with you. They just didn't understand the fact that you were giving them amazing wisdom. And if I take it back even further, I want to go back to ancient Egypt. I want to go back way back. I want to go back about 3,000 years, maybe 4,000 years. And this was a time when pharaohs their word was law. They were the god, and you became adopted. You were a dwarf at this time, and you were taken in almost as a pet to the pharaoh, You actually made the pharaoh laugh constantly, and you were able to give the pharaoh advice when the pharaoh wasn't paying attention. And you sat up at night, often whispering into pharaoh's ear so that he would treat his people better. And he always thought it was his idea. So you have a subtlety about you that is profound, and you will absolutely go against whatever society says is right, so long as it gives you joy, and you will pass wisdom on in the subtlest of ways, and you don't care if you get credit for it or not. The important thing is that people do right by one another, and that's always been your philosophy, and it's guided you through lifetimes, and it continues with this lifetime too. James, what do you get?
When were you born, Teresa?
You mean the year or the month?
The year at this time, in this life, when were you born?
63.
Okay, I want to say in the 20s, you knew Josephine Baker, and in the 1920s, and you were in Paris, and you traveled to this continent. You were a percussionist. You were a drummer. You were a dancer, similar to Barbara's feeling of the belly dancer. And you were a scat artist and a recording artist and a singer, and a real kind of ritualistic performer in nightclubs, and very, very flashy, very humorous. And I want to say you were male, but you had a lot of female tendencies, and you had a huge following. And you were very, you knew Josephine Baker. You were very big in Paris. You were very big in Marseille. Important in Berlin. And there was a real razzle-dazzle about you, and you could do a somewhat of a stand-up act. You had a real following, and you had a huge entourage. But you believed in, there's a bit of the shaman about you with the drumming and the dancing and the scat jazz, and there's a real kind of intention of healing and entertaining and entertainment and creating peace. But you were of that there was one life, and it goes turn of the century, 1900, 1920, 1930, and very incredibly popular. You know, I think you'd probably see, even in some movies, or if you looked at Josephine Baker's entourage, you were one of the backup acts there.
Wow.
Okay, that's interesting. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, I think you'd see yourself. You're a guy, but you're really dressed to the nines, and you drum and you dance and you sing and you scat jazz and you give monologues, things like that.
I think she was also a collector like Josephine Baker was. Josephine Baker had I forget what she called them, but she collected children from all over the world.
She adopted them.
And she had, I want to say 15 or 20 of them. And she cared for them and she loved them. And I think you're a collector of people as well, very similar to what she did. Are you familiar with Josephine Baker at all?
No, not really.
Look her up. Yeah.
She was an amazing entertainer, and she broke through. And she was just phenomenal. Not so much this country, but certainly in Paris.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay, well, thanks so much for calling.
Thank you so much. That was great. I've been really enjoying the show, too. Thank you.
Oh, us too.
Thank you.
I mean, where else do we get, you know, the opportunity to you know, pummel people with past lives like this?
It's really fun. It's just great. It's really fun.
And I think something that I really should point out to anybody listening, and certainly the chat room, that this helps James and I to hone our skills unbelievably, so that you're giving us wonderful opportunities here to stretch and to reach and to get better. So thank you for letting us practice on you. We've got Diana in California. Hi, Diana. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing great. We're doing past lives today. Is that okay with you?
That's fine. I'm listening.
Okay. I feel a very an amazingly calm, soothing energy coming from you, and as I look back through time, I can see you back in ancient Rome, really ancient Rome. Someone who walked in beauty, and someone who touched people's hearts with your words and your wisdom, and it feels as though there's a grace about your energy and your spirit that is very profound. You were actually worshipped in ancient Rome. I don't feel that you were someone who stepped down from Mount Olympus, but people thought you did because of your beauty and your wisdom and your knowledge, and you were highly respected because of your intellect. And that was a time frame where women could be intelligent and were respected for that. And you were actually consulted, generals consulted you, politicians consulted you, and you always gave advice that was not tainted by your own belief system, but was just general, absolute, good logical reasoning, which was really phenomenal. If I take you back even further, you were one of the oracles of Delphi, and you again were giving wisdom to people who came and asked you. And you know, one of the things that the oracles of Delphi bring forward in time is upper respiratory problems. So if you don't have any now, then you're very lucky. But it does feel as though that is something that you might find a weakness this lifetime because of that past lifetime. You also, if I go back even further, were a very, very wise man. I see you in the Himalayas. I see you, you know, just eating vegetables and meditating and not really wanting to bother with society because, frankly, you had no use for them. While you loved humanity, you just wanted nothing to do with the politics of reality. And back in that time, it wasn't anywhere near as bad as it is today. So what I'm feeling here is that, I mean, and that lifetime you were in the Himalayas, that lifetime that you were a monk of some sort, and I keep hearing these very low tonal gongs going off. And it feels as though they resonate to you and they vibrate through your body. And in that lifetime, and I think I'm back 3,000 or 4,000 years, you actually were able to levitate. And you were able to get to a place in your body, in your mind, where you could lessen the density of the physicality so that it floated. Now, I don't know what good it did you, but it told you you had really gotten somewhere and you had reached a point of consciousness that was something that you had been aiming for. But you chose to remain in the mountains. You chose to not go down into the valleys and talk to the peasants and the farmers and the nobility. You isolated yourself because you wanted to ascend to a greater level of light, and that was a lifetime that was very, very precious to you, and you come into this lifetime with some of those qualities, you know, really, really sort of closing yourself away from things when they get too crazy because you really don't want to be bothered by them, you don't want to be influenced by them, and you don't want them to touch you, and unfortunately life is you know is crazy and sometimes we have to deal with aspects of society and humanity that we're really not happy with. And you do a magnificent job. You are a magical person and you bring a holiness into lifetime that is unique and magical. James, what do you have?
Could you say your name one more time?
Diana.
Yeah, I want to say that, you comprise everything and that you contain everything, but at one point with these gifts you have, there's a life where you were kidnapped and put in a box with containing all these gifts you have of the clairvoyance, of the sensitivity, of the knowledge, but you were put in a box, and then there's another one where you were chained on a ship, and you drowned, and these were tremendously frightening, and between lives and in your transformation, guides told you, you know, this is the price you pay for having this wisdom, for having this gift. There's another lifetime where you're locked in to a cell in a castle because you are, you do have wisdom. You have the ability to sensitively predict and know things. And then going all the way back, that fits in with what Barbara said, you were, Rome was 1,000 years. In one of those Roman lives, you were a hermaphrodite that really had extraordinary wisdom and ability. But there is this recurring that you have conquered of being very fragile, being trapped, And everyone depends on you, has depended on you, because you have the sight, your third eye is very open, your third eye is very open. You have extraordinary wisdom. And so in this life, a lot of what you're doing is keeping all these gifts going, but you're healing some of these fears you had.
Mm-hmm. Are you claustrophobic this lifetime?
I have been.
Yeah, that seems almost a given, I think. Okay, well, thank you so much for calling in today, Diana.
Wow, that's very interesting. I definitely will have to listen to this again. And you know that a lot of my dreams come from almost everyone that you've said, both of you.
Oh.
And even, I think this life, I'm trying to get out of that box.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
You're healing all this. And the reason you got trapped is you have great wisdom. You have like magic coming out of you, but it's been shipped away, nailed up. You've been kidnapped, things like that. But you're healing it. This is a great life for you.
Absolutely.
That's why I feel like the last few years of my life I'll have that wisdom back.
Well,
yeah.
I think this is a manifestation lifetime for you, for sure.
Thank you so much.
Oh, our pleasure. Our pleasure.
Bless you.
Okay. Now we're going to drag Deb out of the chat room and onto the phone. Hi. Can you stop typing for a while?
Sure.
sometimes the chat room just kind of takes off on its own.
Hey, there used to be a time you liked when we did that.
Oh, absolutely. I often think that the fact that the chat room feeds its energy just the way, the phone lines do and everything else. So any way the energy comes is we're in, we're absolutely thrilled. I got a number of past lives for you. You seem to be, it's interesting, at the time of Christ you were a money changer.
Uh-oh.
And you were a very good one until Christ walked in and turned your table over, and then you became a convert almost immediately. And actually you followed him and then did go off and shared his ministry, his love, his teaching, the unconditional love. But you always handled the money too, which was kind of cool. And what I'm finding here is that aspect of that lifetime when you were in the presence of unconditional love and understood it and felt it and were embraced by it, you bring into this lifetime. And I don't see you as being a terribly religious person, but I see you as being an exceptionally spiritual person.
Oh, I got chills all over.
That's a good thing.
Yes, it is.
And so what I find interesting is if I look to other lifetimes, I see you. I have two here that I think are just hysterical. In both of them, you wear jewelry made out of coins, and so the element of coins in jewelry or coins that make in one lifetime you wore coins as jewelry and it made you a very you were a man at that lifetime, but you had gold chains with coins on them and you wore your wealth, you let people know how wealthy you were. And in another lifetime you were an artisan and now I'm going back like 4,000 years. But what you did was you took old coins and you made them into what appear to me, and I'm seeing you making them. It looks like you're making wind chimes out of ancient money.
Well,
and,
they change a Caesar or a Pharaoh, and everything you had done was poof, no good no more. Had to do something with it, that recycle reuse thing.
I guess so, but it's just, it's and then you came forward in time and you were a money changer, and then that's where money didn't mean that much to you anymore. It was the love. It was the kindness.
Yeah.
But you had that opportunity to be in the presence of unconditional love, and you were in the presence of it in this lifetime, as opposed to experiencing it when you cross over and you pass into the other realms. You know what it feels like, and there is something in your dream state that reminds you of it. Whenever things get tough, whenever things get difficult, you flash back to that aspect of total, I think the only way to explain it is to, when Patrick and I did our past life show, one of the girls that was talking about her past life was saying, I wasn't embraced by love, I wasn't surrounded by love, I wasn't touched by love, I was love. You've experienced that feeling. And that will get you through anything, because you go back to it, you claim it, and you move on. In spite of any sort of challenges that are put in your way, you are always able to transcend them and move beyond them, because you have that memory inside of you still to this day. And you're one of the few people that I have ever read that actually has been in the presence of Christ.
Well, so, it's just utterly, you know, that's wonderful to hear. I mean, you know, not to be patting myself on the back or anything, but to have the confirmation instead of just feeling it, knowing it since I was a child this lifetime,
yeah.
But that somebody else can say, yeah, we can see that back then.
I've done this for 50 years. You're the first person I've really been able to put right there. And the first person I've been able to say you had personal experience of, you know, angering him slightly. So.
I was good at that. But I can and the part that I remember to confirm what you said is I can still recall it whenever I need it. The image of literally just being embraced by him and crawling into his lap and getting, you know, one of those great big arm wrap around kind of hugs.
Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah.
James, what are you getting?
I also get it's. I'm not sure what this is. You're on the road and you're carrying things, you're carrying balance beams. You're carrying tight ropes. It's a type of circus. I think it's in the 1300s. I think what they're showing me is you're demonstrating miracles in front of real, truly terrified people and truly disheartened people and depressed people. But you're demonstrating miracles, like you can you would walk on this balance beam and then walk on air a little bit, and then walk on the tightrope and then walk on air a little bit, and then. And then flip around, and you're very much a being of light, and you would do this to uplift people and give people hope. And there's also a in the performing aspect of you as well, that which is more earthly is that you can peek. You'll peek through curtains. You'll spy on people. In performance, just to send them good energy, wish them well, see how they're doing, or kind of eavesdrop in a very positive, generous way, to give them, you know, to give them hope, to give them faith.
Okay, all right. I was concerned when you said at first I was spying on people.
Yeah, no, you're doing it. You're doing it as a as kind of like an angelic presence. You know, there's a sense of community and mischief and generosity about you.
Thank you.
A very positive vibration.
Thank you very much. Thank you both of you.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Thank you for, you know, being so
active. You know me, I'm good for a guinea pig anytime.
Yeah.
Oh, But, you know, it's really funny. I do have a number of people that I call my guinea pigs. And if, you know, something new happens or something new pops up I have to try it out on people, I put the call out for guinea pigs, and they're there always.
Yep, you got my number. Thank you so much.
I do. Thank you, Deb, for calling in. Take care now.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we've got Kathleen in California. Hi, Kathleen. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing okay. Thank you.
Okay, we're doing past lives today. Is that okay with you?
That's okay.
Okay, James, you're up first.
I see you in a cloister. See you very reflective. You're female, but you're very reflective. You write, and you inscribe and write illuminated manuscripts. You translate the classics. I'm not incredibly sure what year I'm in, but the Middle Ages lasted 1,000 years, or I'm kind of in the Middle Ages going into the Renaissance. And there's a real nobility about you. You're not a nun. I want to say that we're in Italy, and you're very contemplative. You're very reflective, and you're a real philosopher. The thing is, you're a woman, and so therefore these great thoughts and great measures of truth are locked up. They're concealed. You're not allowed out into politics or into the governing powers. You're highly educated. You have a great affinity with animals. I think you're in an Italian city-state, and that you are have affinity with animals, affinity with philosophy, with writing, there's great grace and sweetness about you. And there's also an amazing balance in your heart of inner peace. You have, besides all that, in internal gifts, in the Renaissance, as women are expanding themselves intellectually, spiritually, philosophically, you also have this... you have an ability with cosmetics. You have an ability with creating beauty that has to do with the face and the body and the appearing at court, merely to get along with people. You do have a great calming effect. And in the end of your life, or the second part of your life, all of this wisdom came out in terms of statesmanship. And you were at state dinners with knights and vassals and dukes and doges. And you could bring a lot of calmness and balance and objectivity and articulation and graciousness and grace.
Wow.
Wow. I have a couple of lifetimes for you as well. I find that I see you in books. It's almost you had a lifetime in a monastery where you spent the entire lifetime transcribing. You were one of those that painted all of the beautiful Bibles, you know, all of the beautiful...
That's very similar to what I saw. I see the same thing in the cloister. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. And I like this lifetime. I love this lifetime. You spent 20 years, 30 years, and as you got older, you sort of lost it a little bit, and they found that you were taking liberties with Scripture.
I probably was.
Well, you're writing your own thing.
I still do.
Your own wisdom is coming out. You're writing your own thing. You know, you're
writing
from your heart because you're a philosopher.
Right, and what was funny was, you know, they did save the books that you took liberties with, because your artwork was so beautiful, and it wasn't until after you passed, and you lived to be like, you know, old, like 80 or 90. It wasn't until after you passed it that they went back and they reread what those things that you had changed, those alterations that you had made, and they had to keep them because they made greater sense than what was actually in the Bible. So it's in Germany. You were in Germany, and those Bibles still exist to this day. And I think the Vatican has collected them. There were two or three that you took your liberties with, but they could not destroy them because not only was your artwork meticulous, but the wisdom that you had was more enlightening than the verses that you were transcribing. So that in some ways, actually, that's interesting. You were sainted. You were sainted because of some of your work. Now, I can't tell you which saint you were, obviously. A man, because there was only one woman, and that was the one that got pregnant. But you were sainted. You were one of the minor, you were a saint. You were sainted because your work and your name and the beauty that you created, did in many ways have a healing effect on a lot of people so that there were miracles that were attributed to your work and your words. I wish I could tell you which saint you were, but you can probably by elimination go through a lot of them. I don't think you have days to you and things like that. You were not one of the big ones, but you were definitely sainted in the element of sainthood. And it was sort of funny because after you passed over, in reflecting back and watching what was happening, you had a twinkle in your eye. It was kind of like, see, I wasn't as crazy as you people thought I was. And if you go back even further, there were texts that were written on papyrus that were collected in the museum at Alexandria that were yours as well. Unfortunately, they were destroyed. But you were a prophet. You were a prophet of great uniqueness. And you spoke of love. You were out there well before the time of Christ, preaching the same thing that he preached. You know, unconditional love, unconditional sharing. You are a family. We are all one. And as long as we function as one, as a family, we will survive and we will thrive. And when we become become separated and we fight amongst ourselves, we destroy the purity of spirit that created us. So you were definitely a prophet, and I'm going back about 8,000 years here.
Wow.
So you have that philosophy, you have that magic inside of you, and it's still there. You've brought it forward into this lifetime. If you chose to channel, if you chose to share that wisdom, it probably would help those of us in this time frame understand and maybe become one yet again.
Wow, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I get to see the goodness in people and try to share it with them, that's all.
That's a gift. That's an amazing
That's a major
gift.
Accomplishment. That's very rare. That is a very rare gift and major accomplishment.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you
unique,
so much.
Well, unique people like you are magical and not given enough credit, but if you were given credit, you wouldn't be as humble. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for your beautiful show.
Ah, our pleasure, truly.
Okay, thank you so much. Have a lovely day.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, one more. We got Stan in Pennsylvania. Hi, Stan. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Oh, fabulous. Absolutely fabulous.
I'm enjoying your show. You guys seem to be terrific right on, so I'm ready.
Well, we're having so much fun with this. Go ahead, James. I'll follow up.
Stan, I just need to hear a sentence from you just to go into your vocal vibration a little bit more.
Okay. What do you need to know? Where I live in Pennsylvania? Is that enough?
Okay. You're really you're really interesting. You've been a All right. In medieval Russia, in Kiev, you were a bell ringer, and you worked in all the several Orthodox churches, ringing bells, and hung out in belfries. And you had what Spirit is showing me is you had an incredibly chiseled face, physiognomy, of cheekbones, big eyes, long jaw, and there was a stealthiness among you, so that you had this one part of you. You got along with all the priests in the Eastern Orthodox Church, and then the other part of you was very much into astrology and cosmology, and then you were also kind of robbing from the rich and giving to the poor. There's a lot of mischief about you. In other words, you would take the surplus from the wealthy burghers of Kiev and give it to the starving serfs. Sort of in the tradition of Saint Nicholas. I mean, you have a mischievous generosity about you. But so you could play through several levels. You could be in the church. You could be with the burghers, and then you could be with the incredibly poor and dying people that lived and died on the steppes farming wheat in Kiev, and you could give them food, presents, entertainment, wine, and love. You kind of went between three levels of society. Really clever, really bright, really mischievous, very, very funny. You loved holidays and all the saint days because it was a way of taking the stock of food and distributing it equally among people. You had kind of a you had fun with dialects too, and playing different identities and surprising people.
That's very interesting because actually my family line has been traced back to the steppes of Russia.
Oh wow!
Well, you really cared for those. You really cared for the serfs. You know, you were very bright and mischievous. You really cared for the downtrodden.
Interesting.
Okay, I got a couple of lives here too. I've got one that takes me back takes me back a couple thousand years. You were a weaver, and you were a master weaver. You were a craftsman that went above and beyond the art of the time, and the fabric that you wove had intricate designs in it that were just absolutely magical. And in many ways, you were a magician at the same time because you wove protection symbols into the fabric. You wove magic into the weave. Your fabric was treasured by people. It was wow. It was priceless. And it is material that has stood the test of time. This is one of those shows that is extreme. You wove the shroud that Christ was wrapped in.
Oh my goodness.
And you put love into it. You put and you were a very at that particular lifetime you were a well-known weaver. Your material was phenomenal and it was sought by the nobility. And you did weave that shroud. And your material was known to last beyond time. It was known to preserve. It was something that people gained great health when they wore it. So that your stuff was sought after profoundly. And the the other lifetime, I have to get in here because it sort of balances this out. You were a rug maker in India, and this goes back thousands of years as well. And you were a rug maker in the time where they tied those knots that were the messages and the prayers and the stuff like that. And you were excellent at it. You were a craftsman. You were an artist. You were everything that was magical. And you were fired, actually. You were, you know, after about 30 years because you got so bored with doing the same thing over and over again that you kept putting naughty words in. And so when they discovered that you were sort of playing around with the craft, you were exiled and you made your own little rugs, you know, you made prayer rugs that had naughty words in. People seem to appreciate them far better and more greatly than they did the really expensive ones. So that you are a weaver with words, and you are a weaver with expression, and you are someone who can weave healing and love into every aspect and fiber of being. And you use words this time instead of materials.
That is very interesting. Very interesting. Even now, I do sell some Native American rugs when I can get them. I resell them for them.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, that's kind of interesting.
That's really cool.
Thank you so much. This was great. I appreciate it.
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Take care now.
Thank you both. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, James. We did it. And
that was so much fun. It was so much fun. Thank you all so much. Thank you, Barbara. It was just fabulous. Thank you.
Oh, and you were fabulous. And we'll have to do this again sometime because I got a feeling that people are going to want to do this again.
It would be great.
Okay. I will talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye now. And thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.